Sorry, took me a second. I'm going to review the what we did in Amendment 16 and Framework 44 for yellowtail flounder allocations to the scallop fishery, and then, as Deirdre and Dr. Pierce pointed out, update it with information. And then it'll be up to the council whether they really want to address this issue today or want to address it tomorrow during the Framework 45 discussion. But we felt because it's tied into scallops, it was worthwhile giving the briefing today while the scallop industry was in the room. So just as a quick overview, Amendment 16 set the process to divide the yellowtail ACL between the groundfish and scallop fisheries. The allocation of the scallop fishery becomes a sub-ACL in fishing year 2011. Accountability measures are proposed in Amendment 15. In Framework 44, we allocated the scallop fishery 90% of the amount expected to be caught by the fishery, and then we added in a small reduction for management uncertainty. In 2010, we gave them 100% because it wasn't a sub-ACL, but going forward, it's 90%. And so with new information, it appears that the yellowtail flounder catch estimates suggest that the sub-ACL could be a little bit smaller. Why do we have revised estimates from last year? For two reasons. The first is we have a new Georges Bank yellowtail flounder track assessment, which revised the estimates of spawning stock biomass. That changes the estimates of how much the scallop fishery is going to catch. In addition, the scallop fishery access area programs and the fishery management as a whole is being revised through Framework 22. So all of these combine to give you different estimates. Yellowtail is important to the multi-species fishery, both because they catch it, but also because lack of yellowtail flounder can restrict access to other stocks. We have AMs in place that are based on yellowtail flounder as well as other things. It can limit the ability of sectors to fish on Georges Bank. Similarly, the value of yellowtail to the scallop fishery is important because how much yellowtail they get helps to determine their access to the three Georges Bank closed areas. In addition, with Amendment 15, we'll also have trigger AMs if they exceed their yellowtail flounder sub-ACL, and that could restrict future scallop catches. So this is a very busy slide, which is hard to read, but I believe it's also in your presentation. The top box is right out of Framework 44 and Framework 45, and it shows you what the sub-ACL is. The far right is the sub-ACL for Georges Bank and Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Yellowtail Flounder. We do not give a sub-ACL for Cape Cod Gulf of Maine. So these are the numbers that are in place now for 2011 and 2012. They were based on 90% of what we thought the scallop fishery was going to catch. And then there's in the case of Georges Yellowtail, about a 3% buffer put in for management uncertainty, and it's a larger buffer for Southern New England Yellowtail. And then the box below it shows the revised estimates that come out and what these numbers would be. And so to make it a little easier to compare, this next slide shows you the differences. So you can see that in the case of Georges Bank, it looks like if you followed the same guidance of setting a sub-ACL of 90% of what they're expected to catch, that you reduce the amount by 48 tons, basically. You know, the sub-ACL goes down from 201, I think, to 153. The Southern New England changes are shown on there as well. Now, there's one little glitch in here that is not on your slide, but hopefully will show up. Oops, didn't show up. Sorry. There's one little glitch in here that didn't. There we go. Sorry. So we have a little glitch with regard to Southern New England Mid-Atlantic, and that is that Amendment 16, in addition to setting up the sub-ACL process, has language that says the minimum is 10% of the ACL in a year when the access area is open. The access area, the Nantucket Lightship access area, is proposed to be open in 2012. 10% of the sub-ACL would be 88.6 metric tons, which is more than the fishery is expected to catch in the whole Southern New England area. But the way Amendment 16 is written right now, that would be the minimum. It's still a little bit lower than what we estimated in Framework 44. So these have some impacts. This is similar to the analyses that we did in Framework 44. One way to look at this is if you give the scallop fishery more than they're expected to catch, or more than you planned on, based on 90% of what they're expected to catch, there's some cost that involves to the ground fish fishery. What I'm showing here are the direct costs, which is basically the difference in the amount of yellowtail flounder between the two proposals. And it's, you know, in the case of George's Bank in 2012, it's not very much. In 2011, it's $142,000 in direct yellowtail cost expenses, so it's not too much there. Southern New England, it's a little higher. We can try and do the same thing with the scallop impacts. It's a little harder because we're not really sure if we should say that the scallop fishery AMs will lead to a direct loss in scallops, because while it prevents them from fishing in a certain area, it doesn't necessarily mean they won't catch those scallops outside of that area. So if you make some broad assumptions that we are doing a perfect job of estimating of all this stuff and that there are absolutely no changes in fishing behavior, then you say, okay, if you give them 90% of their expected catch, it means that they're going to bump up against their ACL, and this is going to result in their AMs being triggered in 2012, and this means that they're going to lose yellowtail flounder in 2012, I'm sorry, lose scallops in 2012 to the tune of about 4 million pounds or $30 million. This is about 7 to 9% of scallop revenues. This value is actually a little bit lower than what we estimated in Framework 44 when we said what happens if we give them 90% of their expected catch. We're a little concerned about characterizing this as a loss, as I said, because we really don't know what the impact of the scallop fishery AMs are going to be on scallop harvests. So how are we doing this year? I mean, how are things going this year? Well, as of October 15th, the regional office estimated that about 18% of the George's yellowtail sub-ACL had been caught, and 70% of the southern New England mid-Atlantic yellowtail sub-ACL had been caught. Now, you have to remember that these are not quite comparable. Remember, in 2010, they were allocated 100% of what they thought they were going to be caught. So, you know, if you allocate them less, then these percentages would be higher than what are shown here. It doesn't look like right now they will exceed either of these sub-ACLs, since generally fishing activity is higher in the first part of the year and it starts to slow down in November and February. Now, one thing we noticed is that the bycatch in the Nantucket Lightship closed area was much lower than in the past. It was much lower than what we estimated in Framework 44. There could be a lot of reasons for that. One of them may have been the SMAS program, where they tried to highlight to people where areas of lower bycatch were. But this is one reason why the southern New England area does not seem to be bumping up against it. Now, had their bycatch in the Lightship closed area been more along the lines of what we expected, then they might be bumping up against this yellowtail subcomponent this year. So ultimately, forgot about this slide. So if we give them a higher allocation than what we expect them to catch, for example, by just keeping the Framework 44 values and going forward with them, it would reduce the risk of triggering the scallop fishery AM. We have to admit that we don't really know yet if our estimates of yellowtail flounder bycatch that we're doing are really accurate. We've only tried to do this now twice, and we don't have a full year under our belt to tell how close we came in our estimating. I've already pointed out that the scallop fishery AM is not really a direct reduction of scallop catch, so it's a little unclear, you know, whether these are direct losses, how the impact's going to be on the yellowtail. We also note that the AM is likely to be more restrictive in the years when closed area 2 is open. I was supposed to fill in the $4 million value here, but I didn't. It's about the same in both years. I was supposed to going to fill in the dollar values here, but instead we're just using the total of $30 million for fishery as a whole in both years if you give them about 90% of the catch. So the question really facing the council is a somewhat simple one that might be difficult to reach a decision on, is are these numbers different enough that it's worthwhile to change the sub-ACLs that were adopted in Framework 44. And in connection with that is, a question of, are you certain enough of these estimates when we're not even through a whole fishing year that you're confident enough that you want to change the sub-ACLs in Framework 44? And then the question becomes, if you do change the sub-ACLs that were in Framework 44, do you follow the same sort of general approach where you give them 90% of what they're expected to catch, subject to the floor of 10% of the ACL when the access areas are open, as written in Amendment 16, or you do something different? Now, this is a discussion the council may want to have here. We sort of weren't sure whether the council would want to make the decision today or make the decision tomorrow during the Framework 44 discussion on ACLs. I'm ready to answer any questions.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom, refresh my memory on the page number 5 in your presentation. That's the chart that shows the expected total expected to be caught. The numbers there in the lower half, are those calculated on several years of catch in that would be pre 2010?
Yes. The general approach is we used observed data in the open and access areas to determine the discard to kept ratio of yellowtail flounder to scallop meat weights. We used data from several years, and I forget exactly which years we used this time around. I don't know if Deirdre remembers. And then we adjust those discard to kept ratios based on changes in scallop, exploitable biomass, and based in predicted changes in yellowtail flounder SSB. So in other words, the underlying assumption is basically if yellowtail flounder biomass increases, your discard rate is going to go up because there's more fish out there to encounter. And, you know, conversely, it interacts with scallop biomass as well because scallop catch rates may go up or down if the scallop exploitable biomass is going up or down. So the two may work in the same direction or they may work in opposite directions when we're calculating the discard rates. So we adjust the discard rates for that, and then we take the estimates of scallop catch by yellowtail flounder stock area and apply those discard rates to that estimate using what the scallop catch will be, what the scallop meat weights catch will be, and that gives us an estimate of catch. So, you know, quite honestly, there's a lot of assumptions in here, to put it mildly, going back to the assumption on how changes in biomass affect discard rates. We generally know and have examined it in a qualitative sense, and yes, it seems like yellowtail discard rates go up when when yellowtail biomass increases, but we don't really know yet if this method is really capturing it exactly right, because we don't have a lot of years for it.
Going forward, using the same methodology, would, if the industry has been able to decrease its interaction with yellowtail, how does that play in? In other words, does that begin to reduce the number that we're only going to give them 90% of? Because that's one of the things that I hear concern from the industry, and rightfully so, because they're getting efficient, and then we're squeezing them down even more. But I need to just understand how that plays out.
Well, yes. Yeah. So over time, because we're using observed discard rates, over time, as the observed discard, should the observed discard rate decline or change, then it will affect the estimates. So, you know, if the observed discard rate goes down and everything else stays the same, as you go forward into the future, the amount of yellowtail flounder that we would expect them to catch would go down because they've reduced their discard rates. We feel that that's nothing more than using the best available scientific info to estimate the discard rates. Now, it could be that you know, down the road, we may want to consider additional criteria on how we calculate this and factor in uncertainty in these estimates, but we're not there yet.
Jimmy?
Yeah, Tom, can you put the slide up that shows, I think it's the previous slide of this, that shows the potential loss revenue from the groundfish fleet and the scallop fleet? Yeah, that's the one. Now, I just want to point out, just my opinion, I think the $142,000 is quite misleading on the potential loss from the groundfish fleet from having less yellowtail. That's the value of the yellowtail. That's not the value of if somebody is shut down and can't harvest their cod or their haddock or whatever. So there's a multiple there. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to measure it, but it is there. The second one is the potential loss from the scallop fleet assumes no changes in the behavior of the scallop fleet because they know they have to do something to reduce their interaction with yellowtails. You know, if somebody told me I could have 100% of my needs of yellowtails, I'd be pretty happy. You know, I mean, it would that's a constraining stock on George's Bank. So my question is, why should it be only a constraining stock to one segment of the industry? And that's how we got to the 90% thing in the past. Now, had we have had an opportunity to look at shifting some scallop effort up to the northern edge where there's less yellowtails and more scallops, we wouldn't have been we wouldn't be even thinking about this because they would be where there's less yellowtails and more scallops, so the per unit effort would go up. So, but anyway, I think that I just wanted to point out that those numbers, in my opinion, are not the potential losses from the groundfish fleet, and the losses from the scallop fleet could be a little overstated because people will change their behavior. Thank you.
Tom?
Jim's right. I mean, these were just the direct impacts. Last year in Framework 44, we tried to estimate what we referred to as the indirect impacts, which was we tried to get at this point of what happens if the areas close. We didn't get to that this time, in part because we're not really sure how things are changing under sector management. But if you go back and look at Framework 44, you find out that there, you know, it does narrow the gap, but between the expected impact, revenue impacts on the scallop fishery and the groundfish fishery. But there's still a huge difference between the two. The value of a metric ton of yellowtail flounder for the scallop fishery is much greater, even when you take in that other stuff, you know, what happens if you shut down the groundfish fishery. It's still a very different gap. I could look up the Framework 44 numbers. My recollection is, well, I should look them up, but they're in Framework. We did do that last year.
Dave Gaethel.
Yes, is there anything that would constrain us now from adding any unused yellowtail onto the following year? I mean, that would seem to be the solution here, is to let the fishery play out for the year, and if there's still fish left over, to add them on to the following year. That way I'm concerned with two things. One is I'm concerned with taking fish away too early and then finding out we took away too many. And I'm also concerned that the groundfish fleet won't get the fish. And so I think that we need some mechanism here to add the fish in the following year. I also see trying to do it in advance a year or two as problematic because it would seem to be intuitive that as the yellowtail stock increases, the interactions with yellowtail will increase, and we have no way of really predicting that. So that would be my suggested solution anyway, unless there's, and I'm sure there is probably some regulatory reason why we can't add them on.
Anyone else on the council? Jimmy?
Well, just to Dave's question, the U.S.-Canada agreement does not allow carrying a quota from one year to the next. And yellowtail is managed jointly with U.S.-Canada.
Mary Beth.
Yeah, I understand the issue, but I would be reluctant to do much in the way of change with not even a full year's worth of data, and really need to consider the variability from year to year and How does effort this year compare with previous effort, and why is the change so significant or appear to be so significant in some areas? But I do think that as a whole, we should be considering a more dynamic management system so that we utilize those tacks that are available to fishermen. And I don't think adding it to the following year is ideal. I think an in-season management that allows fish, unused fish, to roll from one sector to another is the direction that we should go in. It is used in other regions. It can be done. And, we should be able, we should be planning to maximize effort. And we had some discussion yesterday about trying to achieve OI in fisheries in the region as a whole. And I think we need to look at in-season dynamic management and utilizing the fish that are available.
Anybody else? Jimmy?
Not to be a wise guy, but I think what Mary Beth's talking about is maybe bycatch co-ops in the scallop industry that could move ace from groundfish people to scallop people.
I think we tried that.
Yeah,
okay. Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Ron. Hey, Ron, you should sit in the front row.
Ron Smallwoods, Fishery Survival Fund. I guess speaking for a lot of permit holders. $1 billion industry. I think what we need here is a paradigm shift. I mean, to visit where we've been and where we're going, I don't want to set us up for disaster. What are the common goals here? And from the scallop fleet is we don't want to trigger an AM. And when we give the fleet on a particular year, let's just say we had perfect numbers. We knew exactly what was out there and exactly what we'd catch. And if we gave the fleet 100% of what it's expected to catch, we'd be triggering the AM. I mean, we're doomed to failure. 90% just drives the fishery into failure. And failure means not achieving optimum yield. The scallop fisheries does not, it has a historic catch of yellowtail and flounder and monkfish and what have you. And over the years, it's decided that it doesn't really want to target those and land them. It's willing to reduce that bycatch. Before 1994, that wasn't the case. In 1999, when Framework 11, the council, looking at the past data, said the scallop fishery was 15% of the yellowtail catch on Georgia's Bank. If we were given the scallop fishery a catch share at that time, it would have been 15% of the yellowtail. Though we know the scallop fishery, depending on where it fishes, that fluctuates widely from year to year. We put in 10-inch twine tops, which people forget reduced the yellowtail catch in the scallop fishery by 50%. And 4-inch rings improve the selectivity where we don't catch yellowtail, small yellowtail, below like 30 centimeters for the most part. Then we ended up getting cut to 10%. And that varies from year to year. So one of the questions is what should we give the scallop fleet so that it could achieve optimum yield? And of course, the dollar value of that is very significant. We don't want to give them so much that the takeaway from the potential groundfish landings. But remember, historically, those were not the groundfish yellowtail. Those were the yellowtail the scallop fleet was catching and killing, whether they landed them or not. So that is scallop fleet mortality. So it's not a loss to the groundfish in that it's being taken away from them, but it's something the scallop fleet, we could work over the years to give the groundfish fleet more of that yellowtail that the scallop fleet says we don't really want. So that should be our goal. We should maintain optimum yield from the scallop fleet, make sure that we don't trigger AMs, and at the same time work towards reducing the bycatch in the scallop fleet. Now, we don't need incentives to do that. We don't need cut it 90%. First of all, we don't even have the tools on the table that we need to do that. Time area. We keep on telling you that we could probably reduce our bycatch if we're allowed to fish at different times in different areas. Let the habitat process has to be complete because the northern edge doesn't have yellowtail bycatch. It has tons of scallops, sycatch, or scallops, but it doesn't have the yellowtail bycatch. We're not even allowed to use that option right now, but hopefully, as the science comes in, we'll be able to create scallop access areas on George's Bank. The way I look at it, there's four very good potential scallop access areas on George's Bank where we could shift effort. So whether we had a catch share of yellowtail that remains constant over time, where we vary that catch by year based on what areas are going to open or close, we'll be able to probably have a yellowtail bycatch significantly lower than we have today. Gear modifications. The turtle dredge decreases yellowtail bycatch by about 40%. We're testing a new low-profile dredge that does better than that. So we have a gear modification, but it's not available yet. It should be available for turtles, and it's still not even capable of being used there due to the regulatory issues. And the issue of the industry information and communication systems. We refer to the SMAS one, but we forget the industry has been using the VIMS data since 2006, as well as SMAS data in 2008. That information has been given to all the scallop captains before the fisheries begin to help them reduce their effort. And we went to the next level with the SMAS system, which was real time. And now we're experimenting with electronic systems and teaching the crews on the vessels that have the electronic system to do data collection. So we have a number of tools, time area, gear modifications, communications, that we can't apply right now. But all of them, in the long term, is going to reduce the yellowtail bycatch in the fishery. And as long as we're on that path, we shouldn't go and set us up for triggering AMs, which is what giving us 100% of what our projected needs are, especially, as Tom said, we got so much uncertainty in the variability. I mean, we're not there yet in our exact knowledge of where the fish are and how many are there at those times and those places. But as time goes on, we're going to get there. So please, let's just at this stage not try to eat the whole elephant. Let's just choose the direction we want to go and proceed down that path.
I agree 100% with what Ron said about scallops, and I think you could say the same thing about groundfish. Groundfish doesn't want to trigger an AM, and so this is all about ecosystem management, where you're going to have a trade-off. And so, you know, and the only way to do it is for both parties to sit down, look at each goals and objectives, and come up with some type of trade-off and compromise, where you consider social and economic factors. But Ron's absolutely right. From the single perspective of scallops, they want optimum yield and not to trigger an AM. And I submit the same thing for groundfish. You don't want to trigger an AM and then not have access to some other stocks in eastern Georgia. So, it's a decision that is not simple and not easy for the council, but it's a social, economic yield, social and economic consequences of this trade-off have to be weighed.
David?
Yeah, Jimmy answered my question partially before. All right, Eastern Georgia's, we can't roll it over because of the U.S.-Canada. What about Southern New England as an example? Could we add the excess, if there are excess fish, could we add them on the following year?
Sorry, I was just conferring, but I'm still trying to figure out what happens if we do something or don't do something, if we just leave it alone. Tom?
Well, if you leave it alone, the sub-ACLs stay as they were defined in Framework 44. and those are the ACLs going forward. You have ACLs for 2011 and 2012. At some point, we would have to define sub-ACLs for 2013, but we're going to be revising ABCs for groundfish, including southern New England yellowtail, next year. So I think you might as well wait until you get that new ABC before you do a sub-ACL for 2013 if you're going to just go ahead and maintain the framework 44 values.
Okay, thank you. So what's the council's pleasure? Go to lunch? Okay, why don't we break for lunch? It's 20 of 12. So why don't you... Okay. Right before we broke for lunch, we were hungry. And we were talking about the presentation from Tom Neese and the allocation of yellowtail flounder to the scallop fishery. And just going to ask over lunch or over the past couple hours if any council members have gotten to a place where they want to make a motion or have any further questions or clarification on the issue before we move on from it. Okay, seeing none, I'll turn back to Dr. Pierce. Is there anything else under scallops, Dr. Pierce? Okay, we're done with scallops. Okay, then we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is skates.